There is a cistern in the Ozark Hills. You wouldn't see it if you were standing right next to it. You would see weeds. You would see the slow encroachment of trees that have never known a chainsaw. You would see the hollow of a place that used to be something. A homestead. A barn. A dream that someone gave up on long time ago. The Ozarks in August are loud with cicadas, and the air is thick enough to drink. And the green of those hills closes over old things and keeps them. And then, if you knew where to look, if you had the right photograph in your hand and the right voice in your ear, you would see the lid. That was what they were looking for. A lid. Round. Old. Set in the ground so long that the ground had grown a skin over it. Two men from out of state were walking that hillside in early August of 2024. A deputy from Sharp County, Arkansas, named Colton Wilson, and an investigator from Fulton County, Arkansas, named Dale Weaver. They were not from Howell County. They were not from Missouri at all, but they had been chasing a story that crossed the state line, and the story had finally led them here, to a patch of brush about 4 miles from a house that no longer existed. Wilson had pulled the area up on satellite imaging the night before. Somewhere in those grainy aerial squares, he had seen the round darkness of a structure, a well, a cistern, something old enough to belong to no one. When they pried the lid back, they saw silver, the shine of duct tape, the shine of a tarp, the kind of glint you only get from man-made material in a place that should be nothing but mud and stone. They reached down with a tool. They pulled. And what came up, wrapped in that silver, was a bone of a human forearm. That is where the story ends. But that is not where the story begins. Lanton, Missouri is not a town. It is a place name. It sits in the southern half of Howell County, 10 or so miles north of the Arkansas line, deep in the karst county of the lower Ozarks. The roads bend without warning. The hills rise and fall like the breath of something asleep beneath them. There are caves down there, sinkholes, dry creek beds that fill in a single hour when the sky decides to open. Old cisterns hidden in the brush, dug a century ago, by farmers who have long since died and been forgotten. Karst County is a county full of holes. The water moves through the limestone the way a thought moves through a tired mind. Things go in, things stay. The ground keeps secrets here in a way the ground does not keep secrets in flatter places. It is beautiful country. It is hard country. It is the country of homemade fences and burn barrels and small white churches and long driveways that disappear into the trees and don't come back out. And in late 2020, it became the country where two men disappeared and stayed gone for nearly 4 years. Their names were Ira Lee Briscoe and Lyman Landon Little. Ira Briscoe was 25 years old at the time of his disappearance. He had grown up around West Plains and gone to school at Glenwood, where the people who knew him as a child remembered a boy who was bright and stubborn and joyful and very, very sick. Ira had leukemia. He was a child when it came for him. He should not have lived. The numbers were against him. The prognosis was against him. The long, dim hospital corridors and the chemotherapy and the way a mother can age a decade in a single afternoon. All of it was against him. The needles, the masks, the hair that came out in the brush a clump at a time, the grim arithmetic of a small body trying to win a war it never asked to be in. But he lived. His mother said later that the boy who came out of the hospital was a boy who lived full throttle because he understood something that most children never have to understand. He understood that time was not promised. He understood that a body could be a borrowed thing. He grew up. He played the guitar. He learned to fish and hunt and work with his hands. He had a son of his own, a small boy who looked like him. And Ira was teaching that little boy how to play guitar in the same way someone had once taught Ira. Slowly, patiently, note by careful note. There are photographs of the two of them. The little boy with his small fingers on the strings and Ira behind him with that quiet grin of a young father teaching the next person in line. He was, by all accounts, a man with a hard side. He had been around the wrong people and made the wrong choices in the wrong stretches of the road. His mother did not pretend otherwise. She was not the kind of woman who painted her son with halos he had not earned. But she also said, and said it with the bone-deep certainty of a mother who had nearly buried him once, that he was hers, that he was alive, that whatever he had done or not done did not erase the fact of him. He called her almost every day. That it's a detail that haunts the case. He called her almost every day. Lyman Little was 49. He was a disabled veteran. He had served his country, and he had come home with the kind of injuries that follow a man for the rest of his life, the kind that require medication on a schedule, and a clear head and someone, somewhere, to keep an eye on him. The kind of injuries you don't always see when you pass a man on the street. The kind that live underneath the surface of a man and weigh on him in ways the world is not patient with. For a long time, that someone was Ira. The two of them shared a house in the Lanton area. Ira lived with Lyman. Ira helped take care of him. He made sure Lyman ate. He made sure Lyman took his pills. He made sure that when the world got too heavy or too loud, somebody was there to steady the older man through it. It was not a job. It was not paid work. It was the kind of arrangement that exists in rural Missouri because it has to. Two men under the same roof, one young, one older, one watching out for the other because nobody else was going to. That is who Ira Briscoe was, behind whatever else the world thought he was. And that is who Lyman Little had, until December of 2020, when he didn't. In the days before he vanished, Ira Briscoe was running out of road. Something had happened. The exact shape of it has never been fully made public, but the pieces that have come out paint a picture, and the picture is ugly. He had been in a fight. Whoever he fought, whatever the fight was over, the result was that Ira's jaw was broken. His front teeth were knocked out. He was driven at some point to the emergency room, and then later to Mercy Hospital up in Springfield, where surgeons opened him up and put a metal plate inside the face to hold the broken bone together. The plate had a small serial number stamped into it. The serial number would later become the way the world began to know who he was. His truck was set on fire, not by accident, not in some random act of arson, set on fire by someone who wanted to send a message. A truck does not burn by itself in a yard in the Ozarks. A truck burns when somebody pours something on it and lights a match. And in places like rural Howell County, where almost every working-age man owns a truck and lives by it, taking a truck from a man is not just taking a vehicle. It is taking his ability to move, his ability to work, his ability to leave. A few days after that, by his mother's account, Ira was chased on foot to the liquor store down in Lanton. He was threatened with death. His mouth was bleeding, the bottom teeth this time, or what was left of them. He was a young man with a metal plate in his jaw, with broken teeth, with a burned-out truck, being told by someone in that small Howell County town that his life was being measured in days. There has been speculation in the 4 years since about what kind of trouble Ira Briscoe was in. The shape of trouble in the rural Ozarks has changed in this century. The old vices are still there, but the new ones are heavier. Methamphetamine moves through these hills in a way that nobody in the small towns wants to talk about on the record. There are cartels operating quietly in rural Midwest now, in places nobody outside the rural Midwest would think to look for them. Investigators have not publicly tied any of this to what happened to Ira Briscoe or Lyman Little. But Marilyn Briscoe has said her son was around drugs She has said it without apology. She has said that whatever he saw, whatever he knew, whatever he stepped into in those final days, it was bigger than him. The day before he disappeared, two people exchanged gunfire inside a house in Koshkonong, the next small town over. Both of those people knew Ira. Investigators have never publicly said whether the shooting and the disappearance were connected, but they have said, in their careful way, that the timing gave them reason to wonder. This is the world Ira Briscoe was walking through in the middle of December of 2020. He was a young father, a former cancer survivor, a guitar teacher to his own son, a caretaker to a disabled veteran. He was also a man with enemies, and the enemies were closing. The dates of the disappearance are not perfectly clean. Lyman Little was last accounted for on December 15th. Ira Briscoe was last accounted for on December 17th. That day, Ira spoke with his mother. Marilyn Briscoe brought him soup money. She brought him cigarettes. They spoke the way they had spoken nearly every day of his adult life. That constant, low, ordinary current of a mother and son who had stayed close. She would say later that she did not know it was the last time. You never know. That is the cruelty of the last time. It does not announce itself. It comes in the same shape as every other afternoon. It comes with the same quiet, ordinary love. And then it closes behind you and never opens again. Then he was gone. The house in Lanton sat empty. The phone went unanswered. The days slid by. December 18th. December 19th. December 20th. Christmas was coming. The cold that comes off Ozark Hills in late December is a clean, dry cold, a wind that runs straight down out of Kansas and Nebraska and finds the gaps in your coat. Marilyn Briscoe had called her son almost every day of his adult life. The silence on the other end of the line that week was not normal silence. It was wrong. Marilyn began to worry the way only a mother who has nearly lost a son once already can worry. She began making calls. She began driving. On December 23rd, 6 days after the last conversation, Ira Briscoe was officially reported missing to the Howell County Sheriff's Department. Around the same time, the people in Lyman Little's life realized he was gone too. Two men, one house, 2 days apart. Investigators called it suspicious circumstances. They posted Ira's face online. The Howell County Sheriff's Office described him as last seen near his home in rural Howell County. They asked for tips. They warned the public not to approach him if seen because of the gunfire incident the day before, because no one knew yet whether he was a target or a witness or something more complicated than either. His car, a 1995 Mercury Sable, originally silver, was rumored to have been spray-painted black, a small thing, perhaps, in a county full of older cars and back-road repaints, but a tell, the kind of tell people remember in the quiet long after. That car has never been recovered. If you want to understand the next 4 years of this case, you have to understand Marilyn Briscoe. She had nearly lost Ira to leukemia when he was a child. She had sat beside hospital beds. She had counted the small mercies. She had survived the long medical wars and watched her boy come home. And now, 2 decades later, the world was asking her to lose him again. She refused. In the months and then years that followed, Marilyn Briscoe became a force the small towns of southern Missouri had not quite seen before. She climbed into caves. She walked, by her own account, 3 hours into the dark beneath the Ozark limestone, looking for any sign of her son. She came out of those caves exhausted, soaked, dirty, every muscle aching, and she went back the next week. She waded into ponds, waist deep, in the cold months, pushing water aside with her hands. She dug through dumpsters. She drove the back roads. She talked to strangers. She talked to people who had not looked her in the eye. She talked to people who said they would help her and then did not. She talked to people who suspected in her bones she knew exactly what had happened. She built a Facebook community called Ira Lee Briscoe, Bring Ira Home. And that community grew to more than 2,000 members. It became a small archive of grief and rumor and hope and frustration. People posted leads. People posted photographs of strangers, trucks parked in odd places. People posted theories. Some of those theories named names. Most of them led nowhere. Some of them, in the slow accumulation of years, would turn out to have been close. She did not stop. Her husband, Rodney, was sicker than she was, and at certain points could not be at the searches with her. She kept going alone. She kept going with a friend who maintained the page. She kept going with anyone who would still ride along. She lost weight. She lost sleep. She did not lose the certainty that her son deserved to be found. She also, in time, stopped being polite to the Howell County Sheriff's Office. She criticized them publicly. She asked in interviews and on social media and in the small rooms of small county meetings why this case was not moving faster, why arrest had been made on unrelated charges, but no one had been held accountable for what had happened to her son, why the searches kept ending without answers. She was not always diplomatic. She did not particularly try to be. She was a mother whose son had been taken from the world, and she was not going to soften her voice for the people who she felt were not bringing him home. The sheriff's office had defended its work. They had run, by their own account, more than 100 interviews. They had executed search warrants. They had served investigative subpoenas. They had searched in Howell County, in Oregon County, in Douglas County, in West Plains, even into Arkansas. They had made 9 arrests connected to the case, although every one of those arrests was for something else: drugs, other charges, crimes the investigation happened to surface along the way. The sheriff said the case had never been on the back burner. The mother said the case had never moved. Both of them were probably telling the truth. A year went by, then 2. In December of 2022, 2 years to the day after Ira had last spoken to his mother, his loved ones gathered at People's Park in West Plains in temperatures that bit through their coats and released 24 balloons into the sky, one for every month he had been gone. They stood there with their hands cold and their faces wet, and they looked up. Marilyn held the last balloon. The last one is always the heaviest. A year later, they did it again. 36 balloons, 36 months, the same wind, the same park, the same long pause as the colored shapes drifted up over the bare trees and disappeared into the gray Missouri sky. There were rumors. There were whispers about the cartel that had drifted into the rural Ozarks like everywhere else in America by then, about methamphetamine, about the way money and the violence travel quietly down country roads. There were tips that named locations and locations that yielded nothing. Marilyn Briscoe was told things, off the record, that she could never quite confirm and never quite let go of. Someone, somewhere, knew. That was the certainty around all of it. Someone knew, and someone was afraid of what would happen to them if they spoke. The fear in places like that is not theatrical. Howell County is small. Howell County is the kind of place where everyone knows whose truck is parked in whose driveway, where word moves faster than the radio, where a wrong word at the wrong gas station can travel back to the wrong porch before sundown. The people who knew what happened to Ira and Lyman, if they were still in that county, had a powerful reason to keep their mouths closed. The cases of Ira Briscoe and Lyman Little were placed alongside other names in the county, other men who had vanished. A man named Danny Roberts, missing since 1995. Robert Huddleston, missing since 2017. Other names from years in between. The Howell County list was longer than it should have been. Whatever was happening down in those hills, it had been happening for a long time. The break, when it came, did not come from inside the county. It came from across the state line. Dale Weaver was a special investigator with the Fulton County Sheriff's Department in Arkansas. He had been attached to the Briscoe and Little case for years on his own initiative because the early thinking was that the men might have been killed in Missouri and dumped in Arkansas. That theory turned out to be wrong, but Weaver kept working. He kept talking to people. He kept following strands. There is a kind of investigator who attaches himself to a case like this. Dale Weaver was that kind of investigator on this one. The case crossed state lines, and so he crossed them too, again and again, on his own time, as much as on his department's, working the slow, informal channels of rural law enforcement, talking to people who would not have talked to a Missouri badge. In the spring and summer of 2024, he was interviewing a person of interest. The person was associated, somehow, with witnesses to the case, and the person told him a general location, not a precise spot, not a marked grave, a general direction, a piece of country. Weaver passed that information back to Howell County. Howell County searched. Howell County did not find anything. Then Weaver was conducting another interview, this time with a different witness and a younger deputy from Sharp County, Arkansas. Colton Wilson happened to sit in. Afterward, the two of them talked about the case. Wilson said he wanted to help. Wilson, on his own time, started going back out to those Howell County hills with some of Ira's friends looking. Friends of Ira's who had been searching in their own informal way since the first weeks of the disappearance. People who had not given up. People who, 4 years in, were still walking the brush. Wilson was the one who pulled up the satellite imaging. He saw on a Google area image, the round darkness of an old well or cistern in a stretch of brush about 4 miles from where Ira Briscoe had once lived. He drove out. He found it on the ground. He called Weaver. The geometry of the discovery was so simple that, in retrospect, it almost feels cruel. A pin on a map, a piece of country, a round dark spot in a satellite photograph that had been visible to anyone who knew where to look for years. The two of them met up with a Howell County investigator named Tori Thompson at the site. They saw the silver. They reached down with the tool. They pulled. The bone in the tarp was a forearm. The date was Saturday, August 10th, 2024. Inclement weather in the days that followed made the rest of the recovery slow. The full exhumation took until August 15th, 5 days of careful, painful work. There were two sets of remains down in the cistern. They were tangled. They had been there a long time. They had been wrapped by someone in tarps and tape before being lowered into the dark of the stone. The way you wrap something you do not want to be found. The way you wrap something you intend to leave. The Howell County Sheriff's Office secured the scene. The Missouri State Highway Patrol came in. The West Plains Police Department came in. The fire department, the coroner's office, the prosecutor's office, road and bridge crews, EMS. The Southeast Missouri State University was brought in to help with the careful scientific work of getting the bones out of the ground intact. Investigators and deputies from Fulton County and from Sharp County, Arkansas. The same two men had brought the case to the cistern in the first place, stayed and helped. In the photographs and reports that followed, you can feel the unusual gravity of it. A small county sheriff's office had become the center of multiple agency operation, and at the heart of that operation was a hole in the ground in a piece of brush 4 miles from a house that did not exist anymore. One of the skulls had a metal plate in the jaw. The serial number on that plate was stamped, machined, traceable. Ira Briscoe's family had already told investigators years before that he had undergone jaw surgery at Mercy Hospital in Springfield. The plate had been in his face when he disappeared. A DNA sample was taken from Marilyn Briscoe. A DNA sample was taken from Lyman Little's sister. The remains were sent to the Missouri State Highway Patrol Crime Laboratory in Springfield with assistance from the Anthropology Department at Southeast Missouri State University. And then the families waited. They had to wait again, after everything. After 4 years of caves and ponds and dumpsters and Facebook posts and balloon releases and silence and rumor and the slow grinding patience of hope, they had to wait one more time for a laboratory to tell them what their hearts already knew. Howell County investigators were careful in those weeks. They would not say it was Ira. They would not say it was Lyman. They told the press there was no certainty. The metal plate, an investigator said, had not yet proved as helpful as the public assumed it would. The autopsies would have to be done. The lab would have to do its work. Identification, they said, could take months or more. They were right. It took into the spring. On March 18, 2025, a forensic scientist at the Missouri State Highway Patrol Crime Lab finished comparing reference standards from Rodney and Marilyn Briscoe to the DNA profile of one of the recovered samples. This probability that the remains were the biological child of Rodney and Marilyn Briscoe was, in the language of the lab, 99.99999%. That afternoon, Sheriff Matt Roberts drove out to the Briscoe residence himself. He sat with them. He told them, "There is something about that particular moment that is hard to write about without flinching. 4 years of waiting compressed into a single conversation in a living room. 4 years of caves and ponds and balloons and Facebook posts and prayers compressed into a single set of words from a single sheriff." The lab said, "The probability is the remains are your son." Marilyn would say later that even though it was not the news she had spent 4 years praying for, it was kind of a mercy to know, to stop searching, to be allowed, after all that time, to grieve the right thing instead of the wrong thing. She said she got to go and kiss those bones one last time. She also said it had brought back every loss she had ever carried. 8 days later, on March 26, 2025, the lab finished the second comparison. The remaining set of bones had been compared against a DNA sample from Lyman Little's sister. The probability of identity came back at 99.33%. Sheriff Roberts notified Lyman Little's next of kin. A second phone call. A second living room. A second family that had spent 4 years not quite knowing what to do with the empty chair at the table. Two men who had disappeared together were now confirmed, side by side, in the same Ozark cistern, in the same silver tarps, 4 miles from the house where they had lived. The autopsies and the lab work, taken together, allowed investigators to say what the families had assumed for years. Both deaths were homicides. That was the spring of 2025. It is now the spring of 2026. In the months in between, the case has not closed. No one has been charged with the murders of Ira Briscoe and Lyman Little. The 9 arrests made years ago on unrelated charges remain on their separate tracks. The investigation continues. The Howell County Sheriff's Office has been clear in its public statements that the case has not been set aside, that the passage of time has not lessened in their interest, that they continue to follow up on credible leads with their state and regional partners. The FBI has informed local authorities that they will not be assisting in the homicide investigation. That news to the families landed hard. There had been a hope, in the long years of waiting, that federal resources would eventually be brought to bear, that the cartel rumors, the cross state lines, and sheer unsolved weight of the case would eventually attract the kind of agency with the kind of reach that small county sheriff's offices simply do not have. That hope for now is closed. Sheriff Roberts has said that complex cases like this one are exactly the kind that the smallest details can crack open. A name remembered 5 years late. A piece of a conversation overheard at a kitchen table. A truck someone saw on a back road on a night they would rather forget. "The most important thing the public can do," he said, "is keep coming forward." He has said the case is not on a back burner. He has said it is alive and active and being worked. Marilyn Briscoe is still asking. She has said in the most recent interviews that she is going to pray, that she is going to have faith in Howell County, that she believes the detectives are committed. She has said she had a vision once, after his disappearance, in which her son came to her with his hair blowing in the wind, his teeth perfect again, the way they had been before the fight. She told the story without flinching. She also said the work is not over, that somebody knows that somewhere in a town the size of West Plains, in a county where the roads bend through hills, no one really maps. There are people walking around with the truth of what happened to her son and to Lyman Little inside their heads, and going about their lives and not saying it. There is a cistern in the Ozark Hills. It is empty now. The remains have been recovered. The tarps have been logged into evidence. The serial number jaw plate has done the work it was never made for. The aerial photograph that found the place sits in a file somewhere, a small gray square that turned out to be the answer to a four-year question. But the question that mattered most has not been answered. Who put them there? Who decided that Ira Briscoe, age 25, a leukemia survivor, a young father teaching his son the slow notes of a guitar, a man who walked his disabled friend to the medicine cabinet every morning, who would not be allowed to make it to 26. Who decided that Lyman Little, age 49, a veteran of a country that was supposed to look after him, would be lowered into a stone hole and wrapped in silver tape and forgotten? Someone decided. Someone is still walking around. Someone is still going to the same gas station, the same diner, the same back road church. Someone has been carrying this for over 5 years now, and someone has gotten very good at not flinching when their name comes up. But the people who keep secrets that heavy do not always keep them forever. Time wears at them. Conscience wears at them. The slow of a small town wears at them. And somewhere down in the lower Ozarks, in a small town that has more missing names than any small town should, a mother is still picking up her phone every day around the time her son used to call. Out of habit, out of memory, out of a long muscle of love, out of the kind of love that does not care how many years it has been. Some calls do not come back, but the truth still can. The truth has come back from worse silences than this one. The truth has come back from places people thought it would never reach. The truth has waited out men with stronger nerves and louder enemies. And somewhere, in someone's quiet heart, the truth about what happened to Ira Briscoe and Lyman Little is sitting and waiting for someone to be brave enough to say it out loud. If you have any information regarding the disappearance and homicide of Ira Lee Briscoe and Lyman Landon Little, you are asked to contact the Howell County Sheriff's Office in West Plains, Missouri. The number is 417-256-2544. I'm Maya Vale, and this has been Among Monsters.